You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at wicn.org. Good evening, I'm Al Vohner, and this is this week's edition of The Public Eye. Many of us are thinking, well, geez, I'm a baby boomer, and moving into that what's known, better known as the golden years. Well, for some, it very much is the golden years, an opportunity to take a step back, relax, probably put in 30, 40, in many cases, 50 years of your life hard working, and now you've got the opportunity and hopefully the resources to enjoy the rest of your life. But it's not always that easy for everybody. Different things happen to cross our paths in our lives, whether it be health-related, financial, or other. And that's why my guest today is Roseanne Leipzig. She is a doctor affiliated with Mount Sinai Hospital in New York and the author of the new book, Honest Aging, Insider's Guide to the Second Half of Life. And for this segment, we'll be talking with Roseanne about just how do older folks or people who are, as I said, perhaps retired, moving into the latter part of their life, how to keep that fulfilling and hopefully even healthy. Roseanne, nice to have you with us.
Thank you, Al. It's great to be here.
This is a topic that 30, 40 years ago, you wouldn't have got me to pay attention for anything, you know, and I think you hear that from a lot of people. They're in their 20s, they're in their 30s, the prime of life, and, you know, everything is happening. The job is great, maybe be family, friends, traveling, and that's great. That's all well and good, but the reality is that as a rule, you know this better than anybody else, we're an aging population. Many of us coming out of the baby boom generation, which means that a fair percentage of Americans are really older now, retired, and hopefully wanting to enjoy that latter part of their life. But I've got to assume that for writing the book, Honest Aging, that you yourself thought about this quite a bit, thinking, you know, how many people are having this question, should I retire, should I not retire, do I have health-related issues that could, encumber that, or whatever else is going on in their life. But you've kind of streamlined it and made it somewhat of a roadmap that will help people to transition. But let me ask you, first and foremost, do people, as they get older in life, do they need a formal way of transitioning, or is it just automatic for most people?
I'm not sure what we mean by formal, but they certainly need to think about it. They need to plan. You know, we spend a lot of our time when we're younger planning for what will be. I mean, think about the amount of time you spend with your kids about what college is the best college, what job is the best job. We tend not to do that with aging other than financial. We spend, there's a lot out there about how to have a financially solvent old age, but not how to have an enjoyable, engaging, and meaningful old age. So I think that's the area that we really need to work on.
Is it fair to say that if you were to meet with a group of people, retired or are planning to retire, you said that second half of life, I'd like to believe that most people who are at that point in life are healthy. And I would assume that is really the most important thing for anybody who's approaching that second half of life, is that, I'm healthy first and foremost. Is that the big concern for most people as they approach, as they go through the aging process?
It's the myth that they're concerned about. When they think about older people, who of course are not them, all right, it's somebody else. They think about somebody who's not healthy. And the truth of the matter is most of us are going to live it well into old age, and we're going to be in pretty good shape during that time. So, yes, you need to do what you need to do to stay that way, but it's not the biggest concern for most people.
So what is it that puts the – I used to do some talks at the senior centers, senior assisted living centers, nursing homes. And I've met a wide array of people, anywhere from the late 60s and, as you said, some even into their 90s. And I've always heard that it's attitude. Somebody has a positive attitude, then they're going to live a longer life. They're going to be healthier. That doesn't necessarily mean that that's going to carry you through. But I do find that that was a pretty common thing, Roseanne, that many people who had a positive attitude, rather than thinking, oh, my God, the best years of my life have gone, and now what's left? So does attitude, right. Does attitude have a lot to do with it?
Attitude has everything to do with it, okay? Your old age will only be as good as you let yourself have a good old age, okay? Our attitudes toward aging are, unfortunately, formed when we're young, and we carry those attitudes with us into our own aging, and that can influence what we're able to do. And there's a woman who is a psychologist at Yale, Becca Levy, who has done some wonderful studies looking at older adults with negative perceptions of aging compared to those with positive perceptions of aging. And to take a lifetime's worth of work and put it into a sentence or two, basically she finds that people with positive perceptions live longer. Okay, she found about 7.5 years, maintained more independence, including the ability to do heavy work, climb stairs, than those with negative perceptions of aging. She also did some studies that showed that these self-perceptions aren't immutable, which I think is the most important thing for us to learn. She did these studies where she had people sitting in front of computers doing tasks. Half of them got negative perceptions of aging subliminally pictures, and the other half got positive. And then she had them do things like memory tests, hearing tests. Now, to me, those are objective. It shouldn't matter what you think. Right. You know, this is how you hear. This is what your memory's doing. But she actually found that those who were exposed to positive stereotypes had improved memory. Their handwriting was more legible. And they had better strength, gait, balance, and hearing. It's pretty amazing.
I can tell you that I know quite a few people who are late 80s, early 90s, still working, not that they need to. Many have done very well. But I guess what I'm asking, and what seems to be a pattern here with many of these people anyway, is that they have found a niche that they were comfortable with, but there was also a routine. And I asked this about a gentleman that I've known for many years. He'll be 94 pretty soon and still gets up on a ladder. He's a contractor. And I'm thinking, why do you do this anymore? And he says, why not? It's something I enjoy. No, I don't need the money. He said, but what am I going to do all day? Sit in front of a TV? What I'm saying is it just as important to find something early on in life that you enjoy, whether it be in your work or even in your leisure time, and continue that throughout the rest of your life? Is that also part of that, that healthy attitude that gets you to longevity?
It certainly can be. But it also can be that you, as you get older, look at this as a second chance to do the things that you weren't able to do when you were younger, mm-hmm. that you didn't have the finances, that you didn't have the time, and to really allow yourself to get involved in things that are meaningful to you that you never did before.
Right.
So it's both. But the most important thing is that you're doing something and that you have meaning in your life.
That certainly makes sense to me. And I think, I think, as you said, when you talk to an older person, they stay active, as you said, whether it be their occupation or a hobby that they didn't get the chance to really pursue full-blown when they were younger. But, there has to be an end game. There has to be something to focus on, and that always seems to be very, very important. I just want to take a quick pause to remind listeners that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. I'm Al Vona, host of The Public Eye. My guest this week is author and MD, Roseanne Leipzig. Her new book is Honest Aging, Insider's Guide to the Second Half of Life. And I'm not just saying this. I said to Roseanne that this book was so timely, especially for the baby boom generation. Many have already entered retirement, many thinking about it, but not so much the retirement from work aspect, but just taking maybe a step back to, as Roseanne has been talking about, enjoying life to the fullest. But you know, Roseanne, not everybody can do that. As you said, some people have a negative stereotype about aging, and I get it. I mean, everybody fears not having health, which certainly can impact and slow one down, and that can also affect someone psychologically. But one thing I did want to ask you is, in research for your book, Honest Aging, I've traveled abroad, and I've always wondered, especially through Europe, and I'm thinking to myself, these people, they close their businesses down at noontime for 2 or 3 hours. Everybody has these long, extended lunches, very relaxed, very laid back. And I'm thinking, how do they get anything done? But when I came back, I did some research, and it seems that, you know, especially Europeans, and probably more so for other countries as well, I don't know, I haven't traveled extensively throughout the world, but people who have a less hurried life, I guess is what I'm trying to say, less stress in their life, seem to have a longer life. Is there a correlation?
I think there is. You know, it's a hard thing to measure. Okay. But people use surrogates because you can't say, you know, you're less pressured, okay? But we do stress scales. We have things like that. We have enjoyment scales. We have isolation scales. And all of those suggest that the more that you are engaged, okay, with things that you enjoy, the better your old age will be. I can't necessarily say for sure that your life will be longer, but it certainly appears that way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, if you're sitting home all day by yourself, I mean, that's depressing to even somebody who's 20, 30, 40 years of age. It seems so hollow. Empty. I mean, the whole reason, that we make friends and that we, you know, raise families is to have that interaction with another human being. But I want to go back. What was interesting for me is when I first got a copy of the book, Honest Aging, that first word, and I got to believe that you thought about this hard, honest. The fact is that not everybody, and I think you've alluded to it, is that not everybody can get up in the morning, look in the mirror, and say, no, I'm not 25 anymore. I'm 75, but I'm not going to let it bother me. So was honest aging, the word honest in there, was that intentional? Was there some subliminal message that you wanted to send?
Absolutely. One of them has to do with what's out there and what we're seeing. We live in this extraordinarily ageist society, and when we see pictures of older people being incompetent, cranky, and it's just not someone that you want to be like when you get older. If you look at birthday cards, I love birthday cards, okay? If you look at them for 70-year-olds, 80-year-olds, they're not really nice, most of them, okay? They're making fun of things that happen that you'd rather not happen, that you may have some urinary incontinence, that you may be going bald, things of that nature. And I think we need to recognize that as a society, we don't accept aging. But the more you accept it, the better your aging will be. And you're actually being prejudiced against your future self. Because as opposed to all the other isms, you are very likely to live a portion of your life being old.
Yeah.
You know, it's really something that I hope that people recognize. And the use of the term honest also looks at all of these anti-aging things that are out there. When I looked at other books, they talked about aging backwards, being 10 years younger, you know, things like that. And my feeling is you are who you are, and there are lots of ways to make the best of who you are.
Right.
So why don't we talk about that? Why don't we talk about adapting to our new normals?
I like that attitude because so many, I mean, I've had it said to me many times, people will say, you know, well, you are, you know, if you do something different from another person, a different approach to whatever it may be, and they'll say, well, you are who you are. I think the first thing, and I go back to the title of your book, Honest, is just to say, yeah, Yeah, that is who I am. That doesn't mean I can't adapt to new ideas, but I don't want to let go of who I am and what I've become, because I'm comfortable with that. And I think, Roseanne, I got to believe that it's harder today in this era of social media. And I'll give you a quick example that I want to get your sense on this. There was a TikToker about a week and a half ago, and very young, and she's in the in the workforce, and she was down on older people because they're not as they're not like you, some young person who's been with technology from the time they were out of their diapers, okay? Mm-hmm. And it takes, there's a learning curve. And she was so frustrated and saying, oh, these older people, these boomers, they have so many questions, and it takes so long to do a task. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm saying, whoa. I mean, what, you're just dumping on a generation that, one, your parents were probably part of, and they brought you into this world. So I guess my question would be, do some of these negative connotations, do they affect most older people, or are people resilient enough, or should they be resilient enough to shake it off?
People can be resilient enough, okay? But it really depends on your personality and how you've looked at things throughout your life and what you're able to let yourself change. So when I talk to younger audiences, I tell them that the one thing they need to cultivate at that age is flexibility, adaptability. And we need it throughout our lives. We do not know what's coming. We don't know what's going to hit us. And we need to be able to adapt to whatever it is. It's the people who are totally rigid, who have really rough time at many ages, but particularly when they get older. So I think, putting down a generation, the other thing is having empathy, okay? Because they will be in this position at some point, and we don't know what it's going to be, just like you and I had no idea there would be an internet, okay?
Right.
And we even had no idea there'd be remote controls, things like this.
Yep.
So they have no idea what they are going to have to face. And you need to have empathy for people and help them get to a point where they can participate as much as possible in what's going on in the world.
Yeah. You'll probably appreciate this. I was in a supermarket parking lot about 2 weeks ago, and I saw this older woman leaving the supermarket with a basket, with a cart full of groceries, and she was leaning over the front of it, so I saw that as support. I did not see a crutch or a cane anywhere. But when she got to her car, she hesitated, and I was parking mine, and I'm sitting there waiting for a moment and thinking, she probably needs some help. So I waited. I got out of my car, and she was slowly moving, and I said, geez, those are pretty, four or five bags, pretty heavy, all by herself. As I approached her, and I said, can I help you with that? And she goes, no, I'm fine. Just leave me alone. And I, the first thing, Roseanne, would be, well, blah, blah, blah. But I didn't say that. I took a step back, and I thought, good for her. Good for her. I mean, maybe there was some, there obviously was some physical malady there that was slowing her down. But she thought, but in her mind, she was very clear that, look, I've been an independent person all my life. And if I allow someone to put groceries in the back of my car or wheel my cart, as much as that might be a nice deed or a nice thought, the fact of the matter is it's just, once again, taking away a little bit more of my independence. And I emphasize that. Go ahead.
I think that's a great example, and it's an important concept for us to really think about. Because we live in a country where independence and autonomy is everything, okay? Mm-hmm. If you're not independent, you're dependent, and nobody wants to be dependent, okay?
Yeah.
And I find that we need to redefine this a bit. We really need to think about something that some folks call interdependence, where you need something else to help you be able to do what you want to be able to do. So whether it's a hearing aid or a walker or another person, if they're there to allow you to have the life you want to have, to be able to go to the concert you want to go to or get to church services or whatever it may be, then it's making your life better. So So we really have to start thinking a little differently about that, or we could end up being alone in our apartments or our houses, as you were saying.
Right. I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, especially after reading your book, it's mind over matter. You've got to psych yourself. I mean, you've got to adapt mentally as well as physically. But I think the mental part of it sometimes is the harder part of it because, as you said, being totally independent and having all this autonomy all our life. And I get it. I mean, we relish that in this country, and I don't think anybody can argue with that. But you do have to, you know, stop for a moment and say, look, I don't have to give up everything. But, you know, it might not be a bad idea every now and then, either to ask for assistance or you know, reach out to particular services, whatever may be offered. But, you know, Roseanne, at the end of the day, it comes down to the fact that, you know, it depends on the individual. And that, you know, we've only got a few moments left, but I got to ask you this. I have noticed, again, after doing those tours through the retirement communities, that the majority of the residents were women. And I thought to myself, I said, what? Why is that? And I would talk to the staff, and in their opinion, it was that two things came clear, and it didn't matter where I went. It seemed to be a very common thread through each one of these establishments, is that, one, women bond better. In other words, they make friends, they're lifelong friends. If there was an evening social, they would all plan to get together, sit at the same table. And the fact is that they had that social support where they said that most of the time someone coming in with a spouse, the male spouse, they tended to stay in the room, more like a shut-in, and that probably contributed to their early demise. Is there some truth to the fact that females have a different perspective than males about aging?
I think there is, but I'm not sure the exact reasons. I think it is true that particularly in the societies that currently old people grew up in, there was a lot more female bonding than male bonding, okay? There also is the fact that older men are much more likely to be married than older women. So they're much more likely to have a spouse, and they may not even end up in those communities that you're talking about.
Right.
And the third thing, I think, is that there sometimes is a health differential between partners, between spouses, that makes it hard for the woman who's a part of the couple to be as active as she might be.
And that makes sense. I mean, that certainly makes sense. But I did notice, when these get-togethers took place, that it was not unusual to see groups of five, six, seven, women, and you knew that they were, they were very friendly with one another. They established, relationships depending on how long they'd been there, and they were laughing, enjoying one another's company. And I thought, wow. That's a recipe for success, if I ever needed one. I mean, to watch people, older people, still enjoy another person's company. So I thought that was very, very eye-opening, to say the least. But going back to honest aging, as I said, we only got a few moments, but is this a topic that, I mean, what drew you to want to write a book about the second half of life, and that there is a right way, and there is sort of a better way, a more positive way of approaching it? Was it something that personal that hit you, or just dealing with patients? How did it all come about?
A little of both. So I grew up with my grandmother in the house, and she wasn't in perfect health, but boy, she had a vibrant life, and she taught me what you could do regardless of what's going on medically with your body or your condition. And I've taken care of thousands of older adults. I mean, I'm a geriatrician. I'm a doctor for older adults, and worked with them and their families. And over again, I've seen the same thing, that people accept things as being normal aging, when they're not, or normal aging when there are things that they can do to improve their life, even though this is something that happens to most people as they get older.
Right.
So I think those are the things that made me really realize that, you know, small things can make a huge difference in a life.
Yeah.
You don't have to, you know, move to the other side of the country.
You can
do things where you are.
I'm so glad you said that, because I think some people think the grass is always greener on the other side, and it's certainly not. Obviously, honest aging is Roseanne is not telling you that this is how you have to live your life, but it's a guide. It's an insightful guide, and I think it's a great read for anybody. Doesn't matter where you are on the aging scale, but certainly eye-opening and insightful and very, very informative. And with that said, Roseanne, if people want to pose questions to you, get more information about the work that you do, is there a way of reaching out to you?
Yeah, I have a website. It's RoseanneMD.com. That's R-O-S-A-N-N-E. People always get that wrong. So just to check that out, that's probably where you can get most information.
Yeah, and if not, the book itself is widely available. Honest Aging, Insider's Guide to the Second Half of Life. My guest has been the author, Roseanne Leipzig. Any questions about the broadcast, you can certainly give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700, or you can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. And with that, I say graceful aging, and thanks for tuning in.